Tonight's reading is from the book of Mark, chapter 15, verses 1 through 15. Very early in the morning, the chief priests, with the elders, the teachers of the law, and the whole council, made their plans. So they bound Jesus, led him away, and handed him over to Pilate. "Are you the king of the Jews?" asked Pilate. "You have said so," Jesus replied. The chief priests accused him of many things. So again Pilate asked him, "Aren't you going to answer? See how many things they are accusing you of." But Jesus still made no reply, and Pilate was amazed. Now it was a custom at the festival to release a prisoner whom the people requested. A man called Barabbas was in prison with the insurrectionists who had committed murder in the uprising. The crowd came up and asked Pilate to do for them what he usually did. "Do you want me to release to you the king of the Jews?" asked Pilate, knowing it was out of self-interest that the chief priests had handed Jesus over to him. But the chief priests stirred up the crowd to have Pilate release Barabbas instead. "What shall I do then with the one you call the king of the Jews?" Pilate asked them. "Crucify him," they shouted. "Why? What crime has he committed?" asked Pilate. But they shouted all the louder, "Crucify him." Wanting to satisfy the crowd, Pilate released Barabbas to them. He had Jesus flogged and handed him over to be crucified. The word of the Lord.
So it was on a Palm Sunday 6 years ago that I first gave this sermon. And over the week, this past week, it kept coming to my mind. And I hesitate to share it again because the first time I gave it, a friend of mine, she brought her mom to the service, and the mom hated the sermon and refused to come to House of Mercy for like a year. And she still doesn't really like me that much. But I contacted Russell this week, and I told him about the difficult week I was having, and I told him that I just needed to butcher a chicken. And he said, "Go preach that sermon." So I am. And my apologies to the mothers out there who do not care for a little bit of darkness on Palm Sunday. How to butcher a chicken, revisited. Step one, prepare the work area. In late August, her family would butcher the chickens out back. It was a big event, with her father's two brothers and their wives and children coming out to help. Each year, there was as many as 50 chickens or more to be butchered. All the work and fruit of their labor would be divvied up among the three families, and the meat would be placed in the deep freeze to be enjoyed throughout the year. When the families arrived, it was a rush of heavy pats on the back from the uncles, kisses on the cheek with "my, haven't you gotten big" from the aunts, and "tag, you're it" from the cousins. Immediately, the men went out back, and the women found their stations in the kitchen, filling pots with water to boil. Beulah was still at an age when she was always underfoot, or asking too many questions to be of much help to the women. She was immediately sent outside to play. But she wasn't in the mood to be it. She was always it and could never run fast enough to tag anyone, so she was never not it. So she simply would not be it today. She would go and follow her father instead. Sometimes she would follow him openly. He was so much more patient with Beulah and her questions. She loved following him to help milk the cow, Betty. Helping consisted of her father working the udders while she stood by Betty's head telling stories. Betty was a very good listener. One day, Beulah was so full of stories that her father finally spoke up. "That's enough, Beulah. You're making poor Bet tired. Soon she'll be squirting nothing but sour milk. You'll both catch heck from your ma if that should happen." Immediately, Beulah jerked her head to the left, pursed her lips at her father, and then swung her head back to the right to look at Betty. A deep scowl was on her face, not from being angry with her father, but as a result of concentrating. Beulah finished her story in her head without moving her lips once, and by the look in Betty's eyes, Beulah knew that she heard every word. That is why they were best friends. And as far as her mother was concerned, well, she was none the wiser. But today, Beulah followed her father in secret. She walked the same path as her father and uncles, but at a safe distance as to be invisible. She climbed the maple tree that was home to the best tire swing, but the saddest looking treehouse in all of Swift County. The treehouse was basically just a platform of scrap boards nailed together and nestled securely among the branches. But to Beulah, it was her personal private headquarters for all things secret. She easily made it to the treehouse without being seen and continued to climb three branches higher than what her mother would ever allow. And from the safety of that perch, her feet dangled down so the leaves of the branches below tickled her ankles. She lowered her body to rest against the length of the branch. She used her arms to hug the tree, but also to keep the laughter from escaping as she watched the men chase after the chickens. Her uncles amused her the most. With all the tripping and the feathers flying, between the squawks and the words grown men would never shout if they knew a little girl was listening, it was very hard, almost impossible, to remain quiet and keep her secret. And for a bird that can't fly, a chicken sure can move. And as much as Beulah loved her father, she was secretly and wholeheartedly rooting for the chicken. Step 2, render the bird unconscious. As the story goes, it was September 10th, 1945, when Lloyd Olson's wife, Clara, sent him out to prepare a chicken to be served to her mother, who was visiting their farm in Fruta, Colorado. Knowing how much his mother-in-law loved the neck meat, Lloyd caught a young cockerel named Mike, who was only 5.5 months old, to butcher that day. Lloyd attempted to leave as much of the neck as possible, but he may have been too eager to please the old woman. Lloyd dropped the axe, and the young cockerel's head fell to the ground. One ear remained unscathed, while most of the brainstem was left intact. Now, most chickens would panic, but Mike was not a fowl to give up easily. Despite his lessened condition, he was still able to walk and balance even on the highest of perches. He continued to attempt to preen and peck at the ground with his neck, but his cockle-doodle-doo was now nothing more than a gurgle. We are never told what Lloyd fed to his mother-in-law for supper that night, but Mike did not die despite being definitely altered. Now, most farmers in a similar situation would have picked up their axe and finished the job, but Lloyd was not a man deaf to opportunity knocking. He began to care for the bird by feeding Mike milky water mixed with small grains of corn through an eyedropper placed in Mike's throat. After a week of Mike gurgle crowing each morning, Lloyd drove the bird 250 miles to Salt Lake City to be examined by the scientists at the University of Utah. They concluded the axe missed the jugular vein and Mike did not bleed to death due to a clot. And since most of Mike's brain stem remained, he could still control his reflex actions and maintain an active lifestyle. In fact, Mike grew from a 2.5-pound cockerel to an 8-pound rooster. So with the legitimacy of Mike confirmed by the university, Lloyd hired himself a promoter, and soon Mike began to tour sideshows with a two-headed calf and other farmyard anomalies. It cost spectators 25 cents to take a gander at Mike, and at the height of his career, Mike earned $48,000 a month in today's U.S. dollars. His photo even appeared in Time and Life magazine. And although many farmers attempted to imitate Lloyd's luckiness, there was only one Mike. In an interview, Lloyd stated Mike was, quote, a robust chicken, a fine specimen of a chicken, except for not having a head, end quote. In March of 1947, nearly 18 months after the miracle miss, Lloyd and Clara Olson were on their way home after a long tour when they decided to spend the night at a motel in Phoenix, Arizona. After getting settled in their motel room, Mike began having trouble breathing. Having forgotten the feeding syringes at the previous day's sideshow, Lloyd could do nothing to help the bird. And without the aid of any syringe to clear his airway, Mike, the headless chicken, choked to death on the floor of that Phoenix motel room. Mike's fame only grew after his death. Since 1999, the city of Fruta, Colorado, has honored the headless bird with an annual Mike the Headless Chicken Day every spring. The official Mike the Headless Chicken website states, attending this fun family event is a no-brainer. Events include an egg toss, cluck like a chicken contest, a 5K run like a headless chicken race, and pin the tail on the chicken. And that's really just kind of weird. I mean, maybe a little funny, but weird and disturbing too. Pin the head on the chicken. After so much violence and blood and death, it seems odd to celebrate it with games, candy, and an egg toss. Step 3, killing the bird. The book of Mark is all about the shadows the light creates and living with the people in the shadows. And it seems as if anyone who spends any time in the shadows with Jesus ends up scared. But there is also light and healing. Sight is restored. It is my favorite gospel. It's so relatable and the most true to life. Life is not all darkness, but it is dark. Nor is it all light, but the light does shine through the cracks. It is a constant movement of moving into the darkness and then stepping into the light, turning and experiencing both at once. It is not a romantic kind of love. It is dirty and sore and terrifying, but it is true and beautiful and gentle. We are entering the Passion Week. We have the birth of Jesus walking ahead of us and the resurrected Jesus approaching from behind. And right now, we are living in that in-between space. We are walking along the crucified and the dying Jesus. Jesus had told his disciples that he, as a ransom, as a deliverance, as a rescue, is going to Jerusalem to be delivered to the chief priests. There he will be condemned, mocked, spat upon, scourged, and killed. He is not going into Jerusalem to seek power, but to become a servant, a slave, a nobody. He is the ransom. He will become the exiled. And yet, it is still a dance. All week, I have been thinking about the Persian story of Satan being God's greatest lover. Hell was created when Satan was cast out from God's presence. And I keep thinking of Jesus dying, descending into hell to reunite with an old love. I keep thinking of the movement between light and then dark, and then that liminal space where both meet and we are held in grace and love and mercy. Be aware of the darkness. Look for the light. And when the sun rises, crow like hell. Step 2, render the bird unconscious. Can you butcher a chicken in a humane manner? Apparently you can. There are several YouTube videos on how to butcher chickens and just as many blogs with photos documenting each step of a humane slaughter. Some people use baseball bats to knock the chicken unconscious before slicing the neck. And if your aim isn't that great, you can place a wire noose around the neck and then yank. Others prefer to swing the bird by the feet and whack the head on a rock. It is all spoken of with casual humor and performed with the thought that it is more humane to render the bird unconscious before killing it. A baseball bat to the head is humane. But not everyone follows this line of action. One man in overalls hangs the chicken by his feet. The wings spread out wide. The bird calms, and then the man quickly and silently slits the bird's throat. The bird barely moves. And before I know what had happened, I was watching blood flow down from the neck and pool on the ground below. And maybe that was more humane. No baseball bat was needed. A woman for Oregon swaddles the chicken in her apron and places it on her lap. She coos to the bird and strokes his head until the bird is still and calm. The bird closes his eyes, and then she brings the knife to the neck. The body of the bird begins to struggle, and the woman lowers her own body along the length of the bird to hold the bird still, still speaking softly to it until it is dead. The woman cries throughout the whole process. But let's be honest. There is no humane way to slaughter a chicken. Death is always a struggle. Step one, prepare the work area. Her father takes the chicken from a small wire cage and carries it by the ankles. After a few moments of flapping its feathers, the chicken calms down. Her father places the bird on a wooden block. One uncle holds the chicken around its body, and the other uncle drops the cleaver down upon the bird's neck. Beulah rounds the corner of the barn and stops cold when she sees two headless chickens hanging by their ankles, the ground dark and wet below. While one uncle lifts the headless bird, the other uncle tosses the head to his dog, who quickly eats it with one bite. Maybe Beulah doesn't want to follow her father here. Maybe she has gone too far. But before she has the chance to run, she locks eyes with her uncle, the one holding the bird. He is the uncle who teases all the cousins until they cry, and she is scared. Even though she hasn't spoken a word, Beulah can tell by the look in his eyes that he has heard every thought. He smiles at Beulah and tosses the headless chicken at her feet. Beulah dodges the bird's jerky movements by jumping from one leg to the other in a frantic, waltz-like fashion. She screams out for her father over and over and over, frantically searching for his face, but cannot see him. Beulah is lifted off the ground, and suddenly her legs dangle from her father's hip, her ankles brushing against his overalls. Her hair clings to his face, wet with sweat and tears. Her arms wrap tight around her father's neck. He brushes the hair out of her face. He presses his lips against her cheek. "Shh, shh," he repeats over and over and over. Reaching around to his back pocket, he pulls out a handkerchief. He wipes away the tears. As Beulah's breathing calms, she looks into her father's eyes. They are so big and brown. They remind her of the eyes of their milking cow, Betty. They're just that big and brown and soothing and compassionate. His lips touching her ear, her father whispers to her softly, secretly, so softly that no one else can hear. He whispers, "Beulah, look. Just look at that bird. Even though he is dying, he can't help but dance. There's joy in that dance. Don't cry. I've got you. Stay here with me and watch that bird dance." And that is what they do. With his arms wrapped around her waist and her arms wrapped around his neck, father and daughter stay there together and watch and sway from side to side.